Good afternoon, America. Welcome to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop, where we bring you all the news from Washington that the government does not want you to know. Today's topic is gay marriage. We know that the state of Massachusetts just today is marrying gay couples. For the first time in American history, at least in one state, gay couples will have equal rights to straight couples. And you know that on the Inside Scoop, we go beyond the headlines, beyond the sound bites, and really try to seek and discuss an issue. It's important to understand it in detail and understand how opponents feel. And in the interest of free speech and debate, I'm inviting someone who's a foremost opponent of gay marriage on my show. His name is Glenn Stanton. He's the Director of Social Research and Cultural Affairs and Senior Analyst for Marriage and Sexuality with Focus on the Family, the group by Reverend James Dobson that's been one of the leaders in opposing gay marriage and equal rights for gay and lesbian citizens of America nationwide. Now, when we look at the headlines today, one of the things I found most interesting is that there were no headlines, at least in my hometown newspaper, the Washington Post. The story was on page 2. Perhaps Americans are already getting used to gay marriage, though polls show that a majority still oppose it. Not a majority of young people. Young people seem to get the idea, but a majority of all Americans still oppose gay marriage. And Glenn Stanton is certainly with that majority. Now, one of the interesting things I also read today is the churches and synagogues that have always done gay marriage will now be able to perform civil marriages as well. United Church of Christ, Unitarians, Reform and Reconstructionist Jews have allowed gay marriages for a number of years now, but the state has decided not to recognize their marriages as valid. You get married by the Catholic Church, it's recognized. You get married by Reconstructionist Jews, and if it's gay marriage, the state hasn't decided to recognize that marriage. Now, for the first time, the state of Massachusetts will allow people to practice their religion, will allow these gay couples to be legally married. And there was a lot of joy in Cambridge, Massachusetts. There were hundreds and thousands standing in the rain, waiting for their turn. The first couple that got married was a lesbian couple that had been together 27 years. Their adult son looked on quite lovingly. That's just as that reminds me, the first couple in California to get married was Del Martin, age 83, and Phyllis Lyon, age 79, who'd been together 51 years. My guest, Glenn Stanton, I guess would like to interrupt these happy marriages, maybe even take their children away. I don't know, but we're going to give him a chance to say his views. As I said, he's a foremost authority for Focus on the Family. In fact, he not only debates these issues, he teaches people how to debate the issues. There's an article on the website, Focus on the Family, where he entitled Debate-Tested Soundbites on Defending Marriage. And Glenn Stanton wrote and teaches people how to debate the issue, how to debate people like me that disagree. So I expect a lively debate, and I want to welcome you to the show, Mr. Stanton. How are you?
Well, it's good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Well, let me start by asking you this. We have some churches, some synagogues that have religious gay marriages. Now, I would be the first to say that if a church doesn't want to allow gay marriage, that's absolutely their right, just as the Catholic Church can define divorce any way they want. They don't have to marry people who aren't Catholics. How is it that you think that churches and synagogues that do allow gay marriage shouldn't have the same religious freedom as the churches that don't?
Well, I'd like to challenge you on one thing, and we don't know what's going to happen once and if same-sex marriage, as it's so-called, you know, is practiced across the nation. But I really challenge the idea and the thought that churches would not have to perform these weddings. If same-sex marriage, so-called, is found as a fundamental human right, as the Massachusetts Supreme Court has said that it is, how could churches not perform these weddings and still hang on to their tax-exempt status?
Easily.
Wouldn't
let me give you an example.
Be underwriting discrimination by supporting these kinds of churches?
Not at all. Let me explain. Right now, the Catholic Church, I know, has different rules on divorce from the civil courts. You can be
Let me make my point.
Then you can respond. The Catholic Church has said that you can be divorced only under certain circumstances, and there are plenty of Catholics and plenty of Jews actually as well who are divorced under the civil law, but not divorced under the religious law. The same holds true for marriage. I know that there are many a Jewish, Catholic, I think some Baptists as well, that will not marry the ministers that will not marry people from outside their faith. Now, that's not discrimination on religion, because if a Catholic priest won't marry you if you're not Catholic, you can go to a court, you can go to a different religious ceremony, and no one has said that's discrimination on the basis of religion. So I don't see your point.
Well, my point is exactly what I said. If this is if this becomes a fundamental human right, so-called, how could churches not perform these kind of ceremonies and still hang on to their tax-exempt status?
Yeah.
It would be a violation of somebody's basic fundamental human rights not to perform them, right?
No. Is it a denial of the fundamental basic human rights of a Jewish citizen in the United States if they can't get married in the Catholic Church? I don't think so. Even though we do protect discrimination against religion in the United States, a Jewish citizen understands they can always go to the court. They can always go to City Hall. They don't need to be married in a church. Indeed, atheists are allowed to get married in the United States today. They don't have to go to any church, any synagogue. They can go to a court. And the question is, should gay couples, who are also refused the right to marry religiously in many churches, be allowed also to go to the same courts? You say not.
Well, it's interesting that when a couple gets married in a church, they're not married until they've gone down to City Hall and done the official business. So we can't talk about civil marriage and religious marriage. There's really one kind of marriage in this nation, and folks are not married until they have gone down to City Hall.
Okay, so we can agree.
Marriage license,
all right,
gotten
so,
that marriage certificate. I don't
understand your point.
Really at all who say, you know what, we just got married in our church and we didn't go to City Hall to get married. Kind of marriage.
I agree with you that the marriage that matters is the marriage that's allowed by the state. All these religious marriages, all these religious principles are really a side point. You're absolutely right.
Say they didn't matter.
Well, they matter to people in their hearts and their souls and their spirituality, but when it comes to the law, the only marriage that matters is the one that Massachusetts conveys. We agree on that.
And that's exactly right.
All right. We agree on that. So let me ask you this. I read in your talking points, and I have gone through the website, all manner of reasons. Let me give you the first go at this. Why would you prohibit gay couples who love each other, who are good people, why would you prevent them from marrying in the United States?
Well, what we would prohibit from marrying is couples of the same sex, whether they're homosexual or not. Marriage has always been and is about bringing men and women together into a meaning cooperative relationship. And
well, obviously I challenge that.
What?
Obviously, I challenge that. Marriage. Well, I mean, just anyone who studied cultural anthropology, as I did in college, learns that some 2/3 of human societies are polygamous. That even in the Bible, you read about a man taking many wives.
It's always men and women.
Well, okay. The Greeks, not for the Greeks.
About number. It's
okay.
Always about men
okay,
and women.
But not the
it's
Greeks.
Always about bringing men and women together.
Well,
okay, there is
but
no
not the ancient Greeks.
Anywhere, and I've studied anthropology as well. There is no society anywhere that has marriage between members of the same sex as a societal norm.
Well, actually,
the last couple of nanoseconds in human history, and that's in Belgium, the Netherlands, and in Canada, and now here in Massachusetts.
Okay, but the ancient Greeks believed that love between men was the highest form of love. Indeed, it was more important and more valuable, and they included sexual love than love between a man
but
and
did,
a woman. And that was certainly
marriage.
A culture that
did,
brought
did,
us.
Did you go through some communities in that society and say, okay, over on that side of the street, there's guys who marry one another and they're married, and over here there's women who married, and over there there's guys and gals who are married. You know what? You don't have any society. Yes, homosexual relationships have taken place. Even homosexual relationships have been embraced, but never has same-sex marriage been embraced in any single human civilization throughout time.
Let me ask you this.
Anywhere on the earth, go anywhere on earth at any time, and you never find it.
Before 150 years ago.
Let me finish, please. You have to ask yourself the question, who is enforcing that universality of different sex, different gendered marriage? Is it the Republicans? Is it the Catholic Church? Is it Jerry Falwell? Who is it? It's nature that enforces that. That's why we find it showing up in every single human civilization. And it's only recently that we've started tampering with that, and all the tampering that we have done with the family has failed to improve human well-being in any way, and this is just the latest chapter in more of that kind of tampering, and it's going to hurt people, and people are not going to do well with it.
Well, we'll talk about whether it's going to hurt people in a minute, and I definitely want to get to that, but it seems to me that basically it's men that were enforcing these rules. Indeed, until 150 years ago, I'm not aware of any culture that granted women equal rights. Certainly no Western culture did that.
Well, now,
hold on, let me make my point, then you can make yours. Women wanted the right to vote. It was told very clearly, no, women are property. In fact, in some societies, women were traded like goats and sheep. And indeed, in America, until this century, women could not even own property, married women in their own name. And it was said that's the way it always was. And the arguments were made about slavery. The arguments were made about racism.
You do not have it universal that women have been the property of men in all human civilizations. It's actually been very few. And there have been very vocal voices speaking up against that. But you do not, in all the wonderful human rights, civil rights voices that we have had throughout Western civilization and Eastern civilization, you don't have any of them arguing that the fact that marriage exists as between men and women is some hindrance to human equality.
I get your point.
Stuart Mill to Frederick Douglass to Martin Luther King, none of them ever mentioned that. None of them even hinted at that. Gandhi, another one of them.
You know, your argument is clear. Your argument is whatever is right. And
no,
I understand
that
argument.
Really,
no, that's the same argument that was made for slavery. There was no society that abolished society.
That's not what I'm saying.
Sure you are.
Okay,
you're saying it's always been this way.
Whatever has been is what is right.
Sure you are.
But you know what? If something is humanly universal in every civilization, then you have to pay attention to that.
But it's
not. You have to look at that.
We just talked about it's not.
Why that's the case.
Okay, but we just talked about it's not. We talked about societies where women are treated as property. We talked about societies with polygamy. There are societies with... No, I know it's not every society. The point is societies have different ideas. In fact, the Greeks, in many ways, mistreated women because they thought the highest love was between men and men, and that brought us the beauties of Aristotle and Socrates and, you know, all the Greek art. I'm not saying they had it best either.
Is in societies where there is not a strong monogamous marital ideal, women are treated as property. More so than... Women are treated the best in societies, and again, anthropology and sociology proves this out, that women are treated best. Women are afforded more dignity and places of honor in society where marriage is honored and where monogamy is honored.
Don't you think a free society should be able to make those choices for themselves? I mean, another argument from history is that it was always...
Well,
let me just make my point, and then you can make yours. Hold on. We'll go back and forth here. Let me make my point first, and you can make yours. Blacks and whites, the argument about interracial mixing that was always made, and you got to remember, 77% of Americans opposed interracial mixing in the 60s. The argument was always made, blacks come from Africa, whites come from Europe. Nature and God intended the races to be separate. That's the way it always was. They cited millions of years of blacks in Africa and whites in Europe and said that obviously God did not intend them to be together, and therefore we can't have interracial mixing. And that argument apparently was persuasive to 77% of Americans. I don't think you can make an argument based on history alone. I think you have to look at the actual human rights.
And I agree with you. I agree with you. But we can learn from history. But what you're saying is, given the fact that people have objected to things in the past and objected to them on poor grounds, therefore nobody can object to anything in the present.
No, you have no. My point is, instead of arguing by what other people think, by what history think, by what polls show, why don't you make an argument based on logic, based on evidence?
All right,
let's talk about that.
Would you like to hear my argument?
I would.
Okay, here's the problem with same-sex marriage. All the couples that we're seeing marrying today, two men presenting themselves as socially normal and socially equal in marriage, and two women presenting themselves the same way, proclaim that men and women do not matter. A socially equal, a socially accepted lesbian married couple tells me that my masculinity does not matter for the family, that it's merely optional. And two guys marrying tell women that their femininity is not essential for the family, that it's just
really?
Optional. And that's a deconstruction of humanity in the most radical way, because it says that male and female are not essential but merely optional for the family.
Glenn.
No society has ever done that except, as I said, in the last couple of milliseconds of society.
Glenn, hold on, let me respond to your point. I'm surprised that your masculinity is that fragile that a lesbian couple getting married in Massachusetts somehow threatens it.
No, it simply says that my masculinity is not essential for the family, that I could be replaced as a father by another woman.
As a father, who's making these statements to you? I mean, how does it? Let me ask you this: you are married. Now that gay people can get married, Glenn. All right, so now that gay people can get married, are you going
to
divorce your wife and marry a man?
You know what my children will be learning? Here's the impact.
I guess not.
Of course, that's just a silly question.
Well, I'm just asking because it sounds like it's threatening your masculinity. I don't see it.
It's not threatening my masculinity. It's threatening my meaning as a male to the family, and it threatens every woman's meaning as a female to the family. Do you understand that? What it teaches
children,
if we have lesbian neighbors, they're a nice couple and we're friends with them, but if they go to get married and they're living together as married, what that teaches my children is that how are these two families different? Well, my family has a daddy, and their family doesn't have a daddy, so my daddy must not be essential, must not be necessary for the family, because the government is telling us that these two family forms are socially and morally equal in the eyes of the law.
So explain this to me. So if you got a couple next door that's an interracial couple, and they're a black and white getting married, and your wife is white, doesn't that tell your kids that, you know what, race doesn't matter? Right? Doesn't that teach your kids that lesson? And after all,
no,
we had 77% of Americans.
It's still about men and women, okay? It's still about men and women. It's race is not a fundamental, essential part of marriage. That's why knocking down race bans on marriage was the right thing to do. But you know what? Gender is a fundamental part of marriage. It has always been, and it is about bringing men and women together. That's the dramatic difference here
that
many on your side don't seem to get.
Well, let me give out the phone numbers, by the way, because I know there are many listeners that want to join in and ask their own questions. The numbers are 877-57-SCOOP. It's a toll-free number. 877-57-SCOOP. You can join in the debate. 877-577-2667. Or you can send an email to comment@radioinsidescoop.com. I do want to explore the differences between the interracial bans of the 60s and the gender bans today and try to figure out what is fundamentally different. After all, blacks could still marry blacks and whites could still marry whites. And in fact, I don't know of any, while there are arguments over genetic components of homosexuality, I don't know anyone that's found a genetic basis for blacks to want to marry whites or whites to want to marry blacks. And yet we allow it, and indeed even though 77% of Americans were against it in the 60s, way back in 1948, the California Supreme Court declared California's anti-interracial marriage law to be a violation of the California State Constitution, and then it took 20 years until the Supreme Court held the same in the 1967 case of Loving v. Virginia, an appropriately named case. Now, why is it that despite the long history of animosity between blacks and whites, despite the long history of mistreatment of children of blacks and whites, and the overwhelmingly sentiment, at least among white Americans, that Jim Crow laws in the South were good things, why is it that these barriers came down, but you keep having the barriers that you think that gay and lesbian Americans should never be allowed to marry?
I explained it to you, because race is not a fundamental quality of marriage. Any man can marry any woman regardless of race.
No, but a judge in Virginia.
You asked me a question. Right. Please let me finish.
All right.
And those laws that banned that were wrong. But marriage is about men and women. It's a very different thing for a child to say he is growing up with a black mother and a Hispanic father. It's very different for a child to say that than for them to say I'm growing up with two moms or two dads. There's no child development theory that says there's any negative consequences for a child growing up with same-sex parents. But there is a wealth of research showing that when kids are raised without either their mother or their father, there's all kinds of serious problems.
Okay, well, let's go through that. I'm glad you agree with me that there's no child development theory that says there's a problem with same-sex parents. I don't know if that was a mistake.
No. With different race parents. That's
well,
what I
think there is a problem, because the problem is one of prejudice.
Children suffer no sort of child development ill.
They
if
suffer
they
prejudice.
Are being raised by interracial parents.
Right. They don't suffer ill from the parents. They suffer ill from a society that refuses to accept the parents. They certainly did in the 60s.
You know, maybe some communities in particular places.
Right.
But
and,
no, they don't. There's
and the studies,
in Colorado Springs, and there's all kinds of children like that.
And the studies on gay parents, interestingly, and I have reviewed them, show exactly the same thing. They
well,
show that the only harm
studies,
to gay
most,
kids
most
were from
of
prejudice.
Those studies, excuse me, admit that the research is only beginning, that it's in its infancy, and that it's really difficult to draw any real conclusions from that. But
can you cite a single study? Can you cite a single study, Glenn?
And step families to know that children raised apart from their own biological parents suffer in every single important measure of well-being.
Okay, so therefore you're against adoption, right?
What?
You're against adoption, then.
No.
You just said children should be raised apart from their biological parents, so why aren't you against adoption?
Nobody is arguing to normalize adoption in a sense. Adoption is a heroic measure to fix a problem that is not perfect. But that is not what we're doing with the same-sex family. We are saying with the same-sex family that a child growing up with two moms is just as good and just as wonderful as a child growing up with a mother and a father.
Can you cite to me a single study, Glenn?
That it is just as good for a child to grow up with adopted parents as it is for that child to grow up with both mothers and fathers.
I haven't seen a study.
It's a heroic effort by adults to raise children who don't have mothers and fathers.
Glenn, can you cite to me a single study that shows that gay parents raise kids less well than straight parents on average?
Yes. There was a study in pediatrics, the Journal of the American Academy of Pediatrics, and it was right after they came out with their co-parenting study. And it said that children who do not live in a home with both biological parents were 8 times more likely to die of maltreatment at the hands of those parents than kids being raised by both biological parents. Now,
wait, I want to say your statistic. You're telling me, because I don't think you said it right.
No, I'm not telling you. I'm telling you.
You're telling me the study said that children of straight parents are children of gay parents are 8 times more likely to have a problem than children of gay parents, straight parents. I don't think you're saying that, are you?
If you let me finish, I was getting there. Okay.
Okay.
Again, what the study says is that children who are raised by one biological parent and one non-biological parent are 8 times more likely to die of maltreatment than a child living in a home with both biological parents.
You know what? Let's talk about that study.
Because you asked me a question. All right. I'm going to go on and answer it. Now, we know by definition that every child living in a same-sex home is living with one parent who is not that child's biological parent, right?
Right.
Okay. So they would fit into the category of children in that study.
Not
that
in the least.
At a dramatic risk.
Did the study look at gay parents?
Of maltreatment.
Not at all. Did the study look at gay parents? No.
The study.
It didn't. I've seen the study. Let me explain why your argument's a fallacy.
Who is the author of the study?
I believe it's Ellen C. Perrin. Is that right?
No. She's the one who looked at the report
did
from the AAP.
Did the study look at gay parents?
This is Michael Stiffman who did this study.
Did the study look at gay parents or not?
It did not. It looked at all kinds of families.
Okay. All right, but that's my point.
And what they found, the dividing line was biological and non-biological. Okay. And so answer me the question.
I will. Here's my answer.
Is a child living in a same-sex home living with both biological parents?
Let me tell you why it's an entirely logical fallacy. When you compare broken homes versus intact homes, when you compare a home where you have two parents raising a child from birth to a home that's broken, where that bond is broken and one parent remarries and has a step-parent, I am more than aware of many studies that show that step-parents often don't have the same sort of love for their child. The step-parent comes in when the child is 7 or 8 years old and doesn't treat the child as well. There's a lot of abuse by step-parents. I completely understand that. That's very different from a gay couple raising a child from birth, which I would compare to an adopted family raising a child from birth. It's very different to have an intact family versus a broken family. And I think it's very interesting that when I ask you to cite a single study, you can't cite a single study that compares gay intact families and straight intact families. All the studies you cite compare straight intact families and straight broken families. And indeed, I would ask, if what you're saying is true, why is it that the following organizations support same-sex pairing? And I just want to read them out.
Okay.
The American, let me just read out these organizations and then you can respond. The Parent Academy of Pediatrics, the American Academy of Family Physicians, the Child Welfare League of America, the National Association of Social Workers, the North American Council on Adoptable Children, the American Bar Association, the American Psychological Association, the American Psychiatric Association, and the American Psychoanalytic Association all support same-sex parenting. Why do you disagree with that?
One example. In the American Academy of Pediatrics, Ellen Perrin was the primary researcher who wrote that report, and I want to tell you something about that in just a minute. But when that report came out endorsing what they called co-parent adoption, Ellen Perrin wrote a letter to her colleagues that were in that panel and said that never before has the AAP received so many letters in opposition to a position statement from its membership than it has on this question.
I'm sure.
And then she said, if we are going to use And that's the language he used. If we're going to use the AAP as a vehicle for positive change, mm-hmm. we must turn this around.
Yep.
Okay? This was not the entire membership voting and looking at the research and saying, okay, this is the conclusion that we come to. But it was a small handful of radicals, who social activists, who wanted to change that position, and they did.
Well,
and
I want to get
to
our
many
callers.
Physicians who support that idea. Not many pediatricians who support that idea. But like I said
earlier,
I'm not sure if I got it out, I think we were talking over one another, that Ellen Perrin in that report says that kids who grow up in raised by lesbian or gay parents tend to look more like kids who come from step families.
Nope, she doesn't say that. You know what? I saw that in your article, and I pulled the article by Ellen Perrin because I was shocked to see that. And I actually took the article out and read your point and was really surprised that you misstated what she said. I want to read to you exactly the quote from the article because I saw that cited, and it was really a misuse of footnotes here.
Tell me the page number.
Oh, it's page 341.
Okay.
And here's what she writes. She writes, most individuals who have a lesbian and or gay parent were conceived in the context of a heterosexual relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Then when one parent comes out, okay, these are older studies back when gay people were so mistreated that many of them married straight people, which I hope you don't support. But then when that happened, they divorced their parents. And the heart of what she writes is that gay or lesbian parents who have divorces find that their children are treated just like straight parents who have divorces. In other words, divorce is hard on kids whether your parents are gay or straight. That's what she says. What she doesn't say and what you haven't addressed is gay couples that have children from birth. In other words, once we get rid of the prejudice here and once we stop trying to encourage gay people to marry straight people, which I really hope you don't support, then we don't lead to these divorces and broken families.
I don't want anybody to marry anybody that they don't want to marry, okay?
Okay, you don't think gay people should be forced to marry straight people, do you?
I don't think anybody should be forced to marry anybody.
Should gay people just live celibate lives? What should gay people do? Should they not
couple? You know what? I don't think we have a problem in this nation of gay people setting up relationships and founding homes together and being kicked out of those neighborhoods. I don't think we have a problem with that.
Okay.
But what we do have a problem with is
have them having
is
equal
a
rights.
Small handful of same-sex activists trying to get all of us to change our own definition of marriage.
No, I'm not trying to get you to change your definition
of
marriage.
Well, sure you are. You're trying to say that
you think that
you're
you
trying
believe
to hang on to this idea that marriage is about men and women, and it's not. It's about two people who love one another. You are absolutely asking all of us to change our definition.
I'm saying that you've just said that it's okay with you if gay couples are together and they're not marrying straight couples. I'm just saying if gay couples are together and they exist and they have 3 million children right now, they should have the same equal rights as straight couples that have children. That, you know, as Ellen Perrin, and actually based on your website, I went and looked at some of the things she was saying. She gives an example of where you got a child and she's in the car with one of her fathers who gets hit by a drunk driver and is put in the hospital. She has glass in her eye, and her other father comes in, and they won't remove the glass from her eye because her other father is not her legal parent. So the child has to have glass in her eye because you don't think that gay couples should have equal rights as straight couples. And to me, that's really silly. I got this from Ellen C. Perrin's article in a symposium of the American Academy of Pediatrics, Insight, April 22nd, 2002.
I don't think that's an issue of marriage. I think that's
legal rights.
I think that's the issue of an incompetent emergency room worker.
But clearly, if the two men were both allowed to adopt the child, this wouldn't happen.
No, it shouldn't happen anyway. You know what?
It totally shouldn't happen.
If my neighbor were driving my children around and the same thing happened and she took my child to the emergency room, you know what? She should be able to say, you know what? The glass should be removed from that child's eye. That's absolutely ludicrous.
Well, I agree with you that it is ludicrous. The other example that Ellen Perrin writes about is a girl that's 7 years old, has cerebral palsy. Her name's Samantha. Her parents were addicted to crack cocaine. They were convicted of attempted manslaughter. She was placed in 6 foster homes. A lesbian couple wanted to adopt her, but they said, no, you can't, and they shuffled her from foster home to foster home because the state doesn't support lesbian couples. I assume you wouldn't agree with that either. You agree that she should go with the loving lesbian couple rather than be shuffled from home to home, don't you?
Well, and what you're saying, I mean, this is not what we're talking about. We're not talking about hard cases and how we should solve these hard cases.
I'm just saying treat people equally.
We are talking about two women or two men raising a child being as socially normative and regular as a biological mother and father raising their kids.
I'm just saying treat people equally.
It is never compassionate to say that a child should be denied their mother or their father in order to fulfill adult wishes, which is exactly
what adoption is.
Same-sex families do.
But that's exactly what adoption is. You've got a 16-year-old girl, and she gives up her kid for adoption, and that child doesn't live with his biological mother and his biological father, who's 18. Instead, they go with a couple maybe in their 30s that can take care of them.
Yes,
you would insist that that child stay with the teenage mother.
Thing. It's a heroic, exceptional thing.
I think what these gay couples are doing is exceptional and heroic.
That and see that is just as regular and just as normal as biological
I think
parenting.
It is. I think adopted kids, and I know many of them, if they have good parents, they turn out just as fine as biological kids. And if they have bad parents, it's about the parents. I want to go to my callers, though. I'll tell you, I'm going to actually skip a number of the commercials today because it's been a really good debate, and my lines are completely full. So we're going to skip the regular commercial and go right to the lines. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine and Glenn Stanton.
Yeah.
What's your name and where are you from?
Oh, I'm sorry. This is Bert from Minnesota.
Hi, Bert from Minnesota. Be quick. We got lots of callers.
Yeah, I grew up in a fundamentalist church, and the idea was that marriage was not about loving someone enough that you wanted to be around them the rest of your life. The idea was that marriage was supposed to be this analogy, this living analogy between Christ's relationship and the church. I was going to ask if your guest believed that, number one, and number two, do you think that this might be an occasion to rethink those ideas?
Good questions, Bert. Go ahead. Glenn, what do you think? Is marriage really about a relationship between Jesus Christ and the church, or do you agree with that?
Well, Christians believe that marriage, a relationship between a man and a woman, is a symbol of that relationship. It's not all about that, but it is a large symbol of that. And let's look at what Christ did for the church. He went to the cross and died. He sacrificed himself. He gave himself completely up for the church. And husbands, Christian husbands, take that to mean that, you know what, we are to give ourselves up completely for our wives and for our children and to serve them and to love them selflessly, just like Christ loved the church. And I don't know of any woman who would not enjoy a man to give himself up completely for her and to serve her.
I know many women who wouldn't enjoy
well,
maybe
yeah,
your neighbors
I get your drift
wouldn't.
There.
But let me ask you this. Southern Baptists teach that women should obey their husbands. Do you agree with that or not?
Well, you have to understand what that means. I mean, we've taken that and meant that to mean that, you know, women are second-class citizens. But Christianity does not teach that both men and women bear the image of God. That is probably one of the most radical equalitarian statements in human history, that both men and women bear the image of God. And it is hard to subjugate somebody who bears the very image of God, as Christianity teaches that women do.
Let me ask you this, just a number of marriages. Do you support the marriage between couple men and women who are infertile? They can't have kids.
Absolutely.
Okay,
but
do you support?
But not as a norm. We don't say, you know what, people ought to do that. It happens.
But you wouldn't ban
it. But it is not a norm.
Okay,
like I support the marriage of old people who are beyond childbearing years.
What? Okay.
Old age marriage is not the norm. Most people get married in their 20s.
Okay, well, how about a compromise here? Can you support the marriage of gay people and make it not the norm? I don't think it is the norm. I think the great majority of people are straight. Just as you allow infertile couples to get married, just as you allow old couples to get married, let gay people get married and then teach in your church that it's wrong or not normal. That's fine, but at least give them the same equal rights as American citizens that you enjoy.
Well, see, and yeah, we can talk about that, but it's interesting that in Canada, where same-sex marriage has just become legal, 2 weeks ago, Parliament passed Bill C-250, which makes it a criminal offense to speak against homosexuality, punishable by up to 2 years in prison.
Well, we have a First Amendment. Obviously,
well,
I don't support restrictions on free speech.
I would hope that the First Amendment would be durable enough to stand up against those things. But
we have the Nazi Party and the Ku Klux Klan in America.
It's about live and let live, mere tolerance. Because if it were, then citizens in Canada would be able to say whatever they want about what they think about homosexuality.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. It's a silly law in Canada. In America, we even have the Nazi Party and the Ku Klux Klan legal to teach hatred. That's legal. Clearly, we're not going to have any restrictions on our free speech. Let me go to another caller. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine and Glenn Stanton. What's your name and where are you from?
Hi, it's Brian from New Jersey.
Hi, Brian from New Jersey. What's your question or comment?
Just just a comment. I mean, I'm adopted. I live with my biological mom, and I was adopted by my stepfather when I was very young, 3 years old. And, I mean, I love him like a father, and I could be the exception to the rule. I was never maltreated. In fact, I think I have a great life through that. And people are people, and why can't, you know, two guys or two gals get married? I mean, if you're worried about the sanctity of marriage, then nobody should be getting divorces, and I think that's an extremely powerful argument. If you're worried about the sanctity, then no divorce, and there's no reason that we shouldn't be able to have these gay marriages. And
Great point, Brian. Let me address the question to Glenn Stanton. Glenn, isn't it true that it just depends on the quality of the parents, that you can have good gay parents, bad gay parents, good straight parents, bad straight parents, good adopted parents, bad adopted parents? The question is, are there two loving parents taking care of a child, or aren't there, and that's more important than who they are?
Well, see, and that is not bore out by the research. The research tells us that one of the most problematic family forms, as a rule, and we're always going to be able to find exceptions, just like the exception of my 98-year-old uncle who smoked all his life and lived to 98. I mean, we know that that's not the means to longevity, but you know what? There are people who beat those odds.
But you're trying to deny human freedoms based on a statistic.
Excuse me, I'm still answering. But we know through research that step families are some of the most problematic family forms. And that is not because the new step parent is not a loving, caring person. It's because of the nature of the relationship itself. The dynamics of the family negatively impact human well-being for the adults and for the children. And we have to understand, again, that in a same-sex family, there is no same-sex family where the child is the biological product of both parents. It's naturally impossible. So in most and all of them, we have a sort of step-parent situation.
Not true.
And it has nothing to do with love. It has nothing to do with how caring the new parent is.
Really?
It has to do with the nature of the relationship itself.
So whether or not the couple, I mean, I just saw friends. I saw Monica and Chandler adopt babies. Apparently, no matter how good parents Monica and Chandler are adopting those babies, they can't be the quality parents as that young girl who gave up her child would have been.
Here's
I don't
the
get
important
it.
Point. They are not as likely to be.
Okay, but you're basically
non-biological parents are not as likely, on the whole,
Glenn,
to provide as healthy development for the child.
Assume that's true. Assume that's true.
Biological parents.
Assume that's true. I think I could probably find statistics to show that children who grow up in very poor families are unlikely to have all the benefits of children who grew up in very rich families. Should we prevent poor people from getting married because they can't provide for their kids the way rich parents can?
Tend to do better in every important measure of well-being than those kids who are very advantaged but don't have their own biological parents. Parents raising them.
Again, so you would ban divorce, right?
Clear, and it's in
you would ban divorce? You just have no divorce. Once you're married, only God can take you apart.
You know what? Christianity does not teach that. Christianity
teaches what Jesus taught.
That there are incidents of divorce in proper circumstances. But you know what? We have far too much divorce in this country.
How about single parents?
Focus on the Family has very adamantly fought easy divorce, no-fault divorce.
Okay.
And we think that's a very
and
dangerous
if one parent
redefinition
dies,
of family, and it ought to be turned around. This is another redefinition of family that will hurt people, adults and children, just like no-fault divorce.
But what I don't understand is this. I don't think you want to take kids away. For example, the statistics show, and I've seen them, that the people raised by two parents do better than people raised by single parents. I know the statistics.
You know
I accept
it's
them.
It's not true. It depends on the living situation.
It depends on the parents.
The research shows that actually in many important measures, kids in single-parent families do better than kids in step families.
Okay, but I'm talking about kids with two living parents do better than kids with one living parent.
Well, but,
and
but it's
what
a
I'm
question
saying,
of biology.
Does biology really matter all that much? I mean, it's really interesting what you're saying. I mean, you're really, really putting all the focus on biology. You're saying basically that adopted parents can't love their kids, can't treat their kids the way
It has nothing to do with what the parents can do. It has everything to do with what the kids need. Is that the problems that we see show up in step-parenting situations, they're not because step-parents can't love their kids.
Okay, but my point is that there's a big difference between a child that's used to one parent, that child gets ripped out of that parent leaves the home for whatever reason, and a step-parent comes in, and a child that's raised with two loving parents from birth. And you've admitted to me, correct me if I'm wrong, and then I'm going to go another caller, that there is no study that you are aware of that says that a child being raised by a gay couple. Wait, let me just make my point. That you know of no study that a child being raised from a gay with a gay couple from birth, not a broken family, not a divorced family, that is in any worse off than a child being raised by a straight couple from birth.
And let me answer that question as well. First of all, there's not a whole lot of research on that because there are not many families that are formed that way. But here's some data. The study that was in the American Sociological Review about 2 years ago, 3 years ago, by Judith Stacy and Timothy Biblars was a review of all the research that looked at compared kids in gay homes with heterosexual homes, and they found that kids growing up with lesbian parents were significantly more likely to experiment with what they called in the study homoerotic relationships at an early age than kids who are raised by mothers and fathers. And there are few among us that would say that that kind of activity at a very early age, or maybe even at any age, is a benign thing.
You know, I looked at that study because you cited it in your work, and it also said that sons raised by lesbians were more considerate of women and less likely to be promiscuous than sons raised by straight parents. So it suggests to me that maybe...
No,
it
actually,
also says,
the research by...
Well, wait, hold on. The research also said that gay kids raised by gay parents were less likely to be prejudiced and also less likely to conform to gender roles. In other words, women raised by gay parents were more likely to seek to be doctors, to be lawyers, to be higher up, to seek higher goals and not just sit at the home and be barefoot and pregnant. And that men also felt that they could be nurturers, they could be teachers, much more with gay parents. They didn't feel so restricted by society's gender roles. And my question is, at the end of the day, who are you to tell a couple in Massachusetts who you don't even know, who you've never met, all right, that they can't teach their children not to conform to gender roles, that they can't teach their children not to be prejudiced?
Now, see, okay, when have I ever done that? I mean, you're being unfair to throw something on me.
Okay, but you want to ban their marriage.
That's never even said, okay?
All right.
And just to shut me up and throw me away. That's just unfair.
Okay, so you, in other words, would let them teach their children not to conform to gender roles, right? I mean,
you know what? They're the parents.
Right.
Okay?
Exactly. We agree then. Why can't parents raise their kids as they wish?
What you attributed to me is something that I have never said, nor necessarily believe, okay? So don't try that debate tactic on me.
I'm not.
Let's talk about things that I've said.
I'm telling you what the study said. That's what the study said.
That's what the study said, okay?
Right. The study
said. And you asked me, is there any negative impact of kids being raised? Can I show you any study where they have shown a negative impact of kids being raised by same-sex parents? And I told you that there was. That there was greater sexual and homoerotic sexual experimentation by young adult kids raised in same-sex homes.
Actually,
again,
what the study showed...
The study showed... Can we really say that that's a benign thing?
It's actually false. The study showed that sons were less promiscuous. It says that sons of lesbians were less promiscuous
and girls were more promiscuous.
All right, here's the answer.
The boys were less promiscuous and the girls were more promiscuous.
We agree on what the study said. So here's the answer. We take all sons and straight couples and give them to lesbians because they'll be treated better, and all girls we take from lesbians and give to straight couples. Obviously, that's silly. Let people just raise their own kids and get out of their lives.
You know what? But that's the point. They're not their own kids, okay? The most famous lesbian mom in the world has a little boy named Parker. And Rosie shared on a Diane Sawyer interview a number of years ago, she said, yeah, Parker asks me regularly, why can't I have a dad?
You know what?
He knows that there's something missing in his family.
Yep.
And do you know what her answer was to little Parker? Parker, if you want me as a mommy, then you're going to have another mommy, because I'm the kind of mommy who wants another mommy. Rosie is not thinking about what Parker wants or needs. She's thinking about what she wants.
Well, you know, very few people let their four-year-olds choose their spouses, but I'll tell you this. I know that when I was four, I didn't understand why blacks and whites were different. I didn't understand why some families were Christian and some were Jewish. A lot of Jewish kids ask, why don't we get to celebrate Christmas? And the families don't turn around and say, you're right, four-year-old. We should celebrate Christmas. We are converting to Christianity tomorrow because you want a Christmas tree. No, they say, you know what? We're Jewish. We don't celebrate Christmas. We have Hanukkah. We have other traditions. We are not that kind of family. The majority may be Christian, but we're not that way. Rosie can teach her children. The majority may be straight. We're not that way. Be Be proud of your difference. Be proud of your diversity.
Why? No. Why is it that little Parker wants a daddy? Is it because he's listening to Jerry Falwell too much?
Because the majority of society teaches a father and a mother.
He wants a daddy. Daddies are different than mommies, and mommies are different than daddies.
He's 4 years old. He's trying.
Nobody should ever deny a child their mommy, and the social science.
You know what? Let's ask Parker when he's 27.
We should never deny a child their daddy.
Let's ask Parker when he's 27 and not when he's 4, because when you're 4 years old and you see other people doing things, you ask why you can't do it. The exact same example I gave, a Jewish child trying.
We are going to be able to ask a whole generation of kids what they thought of this experiment that they were subjected to.
I don't think it's an experiment. Because we already have kids around now. I will just tell you that in my family, a cousin of mine married a guy who's now in his 20s and was raised by two lesbian women, and I haven't met a kinder, more considerate guy, and I wouldn't want to deny his family the same equal rights that others have. I want to go to the callers.
And likewise, I know of kids that have been raised by gay or lesbian parents, and they said it wasn't very nice.
So you know what? Maybe the answer is they're good parents and bad parents, and people are people, and we shouldn't try to use the state to design families.
You're being very naive to say that family form means nothing. There are very few sociologists that would tell you that that's the truth. Family form means a great deal.
Isn't the burden on you?
That again is why every society has needed to say that it's very important for us as a social norm to link men up with women in permanent, exclusive relationships.
Not every society has done that.
Children
well, come on, you know that's not true. You know there are African societies where people have different partners. There's all kinds of different societies on Earth. I'm not defending them. All I'm saying is it seems to me when you want to deny equal rights to American citizens, the burden of proof is on you. But I want to go to a caller. Caller? You're on the air with Mark Levine. Thank you for being patient. The number, if you want to call in, 1 second. If you want to call in, the number is 877-57-SCOOP. What's your name and where are you from?
Mark, this is Roy from New Mexico.
Hi, Roy from New Mexico. What's your...
Number one, I think you guys have completely, 100% got off of the topic.
Okay.
You're talking about kids in a gay relationship. I thought the whole discussion was supposed to be gay marriage.
Okay.
What do kids have to do with gay marriage?
That's true. What about gay people that don't want to have kids? Why can't they
get
married?
You know what? The argument for gay marriage is the argument for the gay family because the two always go together.
Well, but
it does not always go together.
You know what? Absolutely not in every instance.
And I'm
let Roy make his point.
Hold on.
Go ahead, Roy.
You've been dominating the thing for longer than I've been wanting to hang on. You just said something about how the kids get off. I've known kids that have been raised by, quote, good Christians that are more screwed up than anybody that I've ever worked with.
And I could introduce you to some.
And so don't give me this about who's living with who. And I, quite frankly, don't care about the kids. That is only peripherally related to the whole topic.
Okay, we'll quote you on that. I don't care about kids, end quote.
Well, how about this point? Wait, Roy, hold on.
The topic is...
Okay, gay marriage. One point.
Adult, consenting adults.
Two-thirds...
Engaged in a civil ceremony.
Right.
And getting their contractual rights validated by the state.
Roy, let me see if I can restate your point. Most gay couples don't have kids. Why can't they have the same rights as straight couples that don't have kids? That's the question, Glenn.
Well, because nobody's making that division. Okay, I don't see anywhere in the news that what is happening in Massachusetts only exists for gay couples who don't have kids.
Okay, but you...
Okay, again, it's what I said earlier.
Do you oppose
that? The argument for same-sex marriage is the argument for the same-sex family. They both go together.
Okay, but just... Let me just ask you, though.
For the other.
Gay couples that don't have kids, would you allow them to get married or not?
No.
Okay, so you would deny them equal rights as well.
Because marriage is not just about kids, but it's largely about kids, but marriage is always about men and women.
It's not about kids, and it's a civil contract. That's all it is.
Sir, you're just mistaken. Go pick up any social
married man for 38 years.
Go pick up any social history on marriage, and you will find that the anthropologist or sociologist or historian will tell you that marriage in most cultures is about the next generation. It's about providing what the next human generation needs.
Controlling the sexual mores of the tribe.
Exactly. That's part of it. And making that those making sure that those sexual mores produce in a good way a healthy, good, productive next generation.
Okay.
Now which is more healthy? Seeing a loving couple respecting each other, honoring each other that happen to be of the same sex, or a heterosexual couple where the old lady's running around on the old man. The old man's beating up on the old lady. I mean, which is a better relationship for a kid to look at?
Okay, how logical is that question? You're comparing apples and oranges there.
Logical.
It would be better for a child to be raised by wolves than in a situation like that, okay? But nobody is arguing for the social ideal of that.
I think Roy's point is this.
No, you've clouded the whole thing, and I'm not talking one bit about a kid in the relationship. If the parents are not doing a good job of raising a kid, take the kid out of the relationship and give him to somebody that's going to do a good job.
Roy.
And sexuality has nothing to do with raising kids well.
Roy, thank you for your call. I couldn't agree with you more. I really appreciate your call. I'm going to try to pose it to him and try to get an answer. Glenn, as I see Roy's point, it's the same point I've been trying to make, and I've been trying to get an answer from you on. Isn't it true that there are good gay parents and bad gay parents and good straight parents and bad straight
parents?
And that
absolutely. I know many of them myself, okay?
Good.
Absolutely.
So shouldn't we as a society honor... shouldn't we as a society allow good parents, all right, and try to stop bad parents? And if there's good gay parents, let them get married and have the same rights as good straight parents do. Why is it that you want to deny them equal rights?
Are you talking about interviewing the couples before they can get married to make sure that they're good parents?
No, I think the government...
That's exactly what you're saying.
No, I think the government should stay out of it. And that if there's a problem, if there's abuse, or drug use, or something like that, you take the kids out of the home, but you don't do it based...
They test them.
No, you're talking over me, but my point is very simple. You let Americans be free. You let people get married. And then if there's abuse or drug use or some reason to take a kid away from a parent, you take a kid away from your parent. But you don't judge the parents based on their skin color, and you don't judge based on their sex, and you don't judge based on their sexual orientation.
Sexual orientation are way two different things, okay?
Why?
And there are many in the African-American community that are outraged.
Well, they're wrong. They're dead wrong. And many aren't. John Lewis, I got to tell you, who marched...
Jesse Jackson, who said that, you know what, homosexuals were never called three-fifths persons the Constitution and never needed the Voting Rights Act to be able to vote. Okay?
I will be willing to grant you that racism is worse than homophobia in this country. That doesn't mean that homophobia is not a problem. I mean,
but
come on.
But they're not rooted in the same thing.
They are different things. I grant you. They are different things. Racism, homophobia, anti-religious sentiment, anti-Semitism, they're different things. They're all bad things. And it seems to me, the heart of my question is, shouldn't every American be treated equally under the law or not?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So why can't...
Absolutely.
All right. I'm glad we agree on that. I'm not sure, though, why you won't let gay couples get to get married when you let straight couples get married.
Because that means that we are redefining marriage, okay? It would be like, well, do you believe that every citizen ought to be able to play football, okay? But then you say, but they want to play football with not using their hands and using a little round ball that they kick around. Well, you're talking about something else.
That's a silly analogy, because obviously
everybody ought to be able to play football.
That's a silly analogy.
But nobody has a right to say that football is another thing simply by changing the rules.
It's a silly analogy. Some people play football better than others, and you still haven't been able to show me one study to show that straight people are better parents than gay parents or than gay people, or straight people are better married than gay people. You can't show me a difference. You got to remember, a Virginia judge said in the 1960s that blacks and whites can't marry because God separated. Now you're talking over me, and we're not going to get in a good debate here if you keep talking over me. I'm trying to let you speak, and you let me speak as well. A Virginia judge said in the 1960s that God separated the races on purpose, and therefore blacks and whites shouldn't get married. Now that judge, that view has changed. Why can't we let people alone and live their lives? And, you know, I won't force you to marry a gay man,
and
you won't...
quality of marriage that was based on race. But a fundamental
that's what they said.
Of marriage is that it bridges the human gap.
Just because you say so. Just because you say so, it's true. I understand, but you haven't been able to say why.
Well,
marriage is between a man and a woman because I say so. You know, that's not a strong debating point, Glenn. It may sound good to people who don't think about it, but, you know, people also said men are better than women because I say so.
That two men or two women ought to get married because that equals equality.
I'm saying if they want to, leave them alone. Leave him alone. Del Martin is 83 years old. Phyllis Lyon is 79 years old. They've been together 51 years. Neither of these women have done anything to hurt you. Why do you want to wreck their lives? Why do you want to make it if Del Martin's in a hospital, Phyllis Lyon can't visit her? Are you that cruel? That vindictive? Why do you hate Del Martin and Phyllis Lyon so?
Who has ever gone to their house and tried to tell them that they can't have a meaningful relationship?
You tell them that they can't have equal rights. You're telling them that if one dies, they can't get Social Security benefits. They can't visit each other in the hospital. You're telling them that they can't will. They have to pay extra taxes. Well, you really think gay people should pay higher taxes than straight people? I mean,
do you think that married couples ought to pay higher taxes than non-married couples? That's
I think all married couples now, should be treated identically, whether they're gay or straight. That's the heart of it. That's the heart of it.
And you know what? Marriage law does not care about sexual orientation. It cares about whether men are marrying women, because that is what society needs. Let me ask you this question.
But you can't say why society needs it.
Can society suffer from too much natural marriage? That is, too many men marrying too many women in a monogamous, committed relationship?
Yes, it can. I'll tell you why it can. If a gay man is forced to marry, even though he's gay,
you know,
it's likely to lead up.
Listen, nobody's making anybody marry anybody.
Okay, well then your view is that a gay man should necessarily marry a straight woman. That's
no,
good, and shouldn't marry a gay man either.
If he wants to, he can, and nobody is going to try to stop him.
You just did. You just said if you marry a gay man, we are not going to give you equal rights. We are going to legally discriminate against you. You are second class citizens. Tough luck, buddy. You shouldn't have been gay.
Because you're not talking about marriage. You're talking about something else.
I'm talking about marriage. Why are you...
Okay, and see, that's the point. That's the point.
You just say it's not in my definition.
All the other people that I debate on this issue just say, oh, no, marriage is not about men and women. Marriage is just simply about people who love one another.
You know what? Don't call it marriage. Call it whatever you want. Call it a civil right. Call it state-organized couplehood. I don't care what you call it.
No.
It should be equal between straights and gays. And you don't support that equality, and I don't agree with second-class citizenship.
Most of the advocates on your side would not support that. They would say, you know what? No, call it marriage.
I'd rather call it marriage, but the heart of the question is equal rights for all, and you told me you support equal rights for all.
I absolutely do. But you don't. Should gay couples
pay higher taxes than straight couples? Yes or no?
And I think that anybody ought to be able to get married and that their sexual orientation has nothing to do with it.
Should gay couples pay higher taxes than straight couples?
There is no civil right or no right to redefine marriage,
Glenn,
so that male and female have nothing to do with marriage.
Should gay couples pay higher taxes than straight couples?
Should married couples pay higher taxes than non-married?
You're not going to answer my question, are you?
Well, I am. You know, there's all kinds of inequities in the tax law.
Well, that's right. The law favors couples over singles. It does. Now, do you think gay couples should get the same favor that straight couples get? Apparently not. Right? You think gay couples should pay more taxes? I'll give you another example of a friend of mine. His partner died. And they had a house together. They jointly owned it. They've been together a number of years. And because they were gay, he had to pay so many taxes that he had to give up his house. He was not allowed to keep the house that he'd lived in
not
for 15 years.
He was gay.
Absolutely, because he's gay. Because they were a gay couple. And if they'd been a married couple, I'm going to tell you the law. It's the law. It happened in New Jersey. If they'd been a married couple, one of them can give the house to the other, and there's absolutely no taxes. But because they're a gay couple rather than a straight couple, he had to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars in taxes. He wasn't even allowed to get it by will without paying taxes on it, because they were not, according to the state, they were not related in any way. And he lost his house because he's gay. And that, to me, is just one of the many, many examples of the unfairness that goes on here. And I think most Americans understand that's unfair.
Couldn't they have seen an attorney and worked out a contractual agreement that if something like that happened?
They did. They jointly owned the house. They said that it goes to the other person. They had it all signed, but the state of New Jersey said it doesn't matter what you do with your attorney, because if you're not biologically related, you have to pay taxes when one dies.
Ludicrous.
That's what the law was.
My property is my property, and I can will it to whoever I want.
Yes, but you have to pay taxes if it's not biology. You see, if it's your spouse and you die, you can give it up without paying taxes. If it's not your spouse, and New Jersey still hasn't allowed gay marriages yet, although I hope they will someday, you've got to pay so many taxes you lose your house. And that's just New Jersey's way of dealing with it, and I just one example of it being wrong. Hey, Glenn. Our time is up. An hour went really fast. This is the first show I've done without commercial breaks, but I thought we had such a good exchange back and forth that I actually gave up the commercial breaks. And I got to tell you, I think it's been a really strong debate. I think you've been a strong advocate for your cause. And even though I very much disagree with you, as you know, I fervently support your right to hold your view. And I want to thank you for coming on my show.
Well, and likewise, we agree on that. And I've enjoyed the time. And thank you for having me on.
And come back anytime you want to debate this issue again. I really appreciate it.
Very good.
Okay.
Thank you, Mark.
That's it for the Inside Scoop today. It's been, like I said, this is the first show I've ever done without commercial breaks. But it was quite a debate, I thought, between us. And if you want to comment on this, I know that I didn't get a chance to get to all your calls. A lot of the phones lit up. You can comment on my blog. Go to RadioInsideScoop.com. Go to the show on gay marriage and comment. Say what you thought. Was I unfair? Was I fair? Was I right? Was I wrong? Was Glenn right? Was he wrong? What did you think of the debate? Let me know on the blog. Just go right there. Make your comment. Let everyone else know, too. Tomorrow is a great show. It is Election Tuesday, and we're going to discuss what John Kerry plans to do about a vice presidential choice. Who should he choose and why? That'll be tomorrow on the Inside Scoop. Thank you very much for joining in to, like I said, what was a really terrific debate. And I hope you'll tune in tomorrow, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 2 Central, 1 Mountain, noon Pacific. This is Mark Levine signing off.